John, let's set the scene. We're sitting on press row, the elevated press row at Ball Arena. Bunch of people who've been covering this team for a long time. You've been covering them for a long time. I've been around them since they opened in the Metrodome. Jace Frederick from the Pioneer Press, Chris Hine from my paper. You know, there's some Timberwolves employees, there's some national people and other athletic people to your right. And the Wolves are down by 20. It feels like it's over. They're not playing well. It's not like bad luck. They're playing pretty poorly, especially offensively. All of a sudden, they start the comeback, and we get into the fourth quarter, and we're all looking at each other like, they're going to win this game, and Nuggets fans are leaving, and the Wolves are crushing them. As someone who grew up a Minnesota sports fan and has covered this team through a lot of bad seasons, what was that moment like for you?
Yeah, it's funny, Jim, because at the start of this series, I picked the Wolves in seven. And so I anticipated being in this spot. I actually believed that the Wolves could go into Denver and win a game on the road in game seven. And so that's where my mindset was at the start of the series. Certainly the way that things had gone throughout the series shook my equilibrium a little bit, and I didn't know what to expect going into that game. But then when you see how it all played out with Ant struggling, with just the offense really, really shutting down for the first half, with them being down 20 with 10 minutes to go in the third quarter, and then clawing their way back the way that they did, and taking the whole thing over, and you're listening to hundreds of Wolves fans going crazy, making Ball Arena Target Center West, like, and you're seeing a Timberwolves team that has been broken for 20 years break the reigning champions. It really was like almost too much for me to really comprehend in the moment. It was jaw-dropping. It was shocking. It was thrilling. It was all of those things. And I, even having watched this team and its toughness and its resilience and its ability to take a punch all year long, that particular moment and that half of basketball was something I'd never seen before in my life. And to see them not only win the game, but absolutely strangle the Nuggets and take it and win it going away the way that they did was just another level of basketball viewing experience that I've just never had. It was remarkable.
John, it was an amazing experience. It was great to be there. Also, I hate to scoop you on this, but I have a source close to Glenn Taylor who said that the franchise, if you want to buy it, it's going to be $300 billion now.
That's certainly what it looks like right now, right? I mean, they're going to be the favorites in the Western Conference Finals, probably. They have an ascendant superstar. Anything is on the table for them right now. They're selling out every game. They're making gobs of money. Like, yeah, it's everyone break out their wallets because it's going to be expensive if Glenn wins this arbitration case and gets the team back in his control.
So we cover sports a lot, and we've been doing it for a long time, and we constantly experience teams who tell us that they're unified, tell us that they're tough, that they're resilient. You hear the same words from every team in every setting, whether they are 1-85 or 85-1. This team embodies all of that. The toughness, the togetherness, the ability, the way they are coached, the way they respond to their coaching, the way they stick up for each other, and the fact that they're all very pleasant people to be around on a daily basis, which also is a very unusual thing. How much fun has it been to cover this team under these circumstances with these people?
Yeah, you know, you sometimes wonder, does the winning kind of make it fun, or does the team have fun and then that makes the winning? And I think it's actually, with this group, I think it's that second, the latter part of it. I think that their chemistry and their just overall vibe has certainly helped raise their level of play on the court. And it's been a really cool experience because it is a unique locker room. And there is some common threads, I think, that really bind this group that maybe wouldn't be the same under different circumstances. Karl Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert are two of the most targeted, scrutinized, ridiculed players in the league. And I think that they understand each other because they've sort of walked in each other's shoes. And so they have a kinship. Anthony Edwards was discounted coming into the league and wasn't taken seriously. And so he has a bit of a chip on his shoulder that way. But then you have, you know, Naz Reid and Rudy Gobert have a lot in common in that both of them are self-made players. Like, they came into the NBA with incredibly raw and just through sheer work ethic and will and commitment to improving have made themselves into crucial players on a team that's going deep in the playoffs. Then you have, you know, the wise old vet in Mike Conley. You have Kyle Anderson, who is a veteran, but also has a little bit of prickly fire to him. I mean, it's just like all of the pieces fit together in a way that, in, you know, in my 20 years covering this team, I've never seen it like this. You know, there's been teams with good vibes. There's been teams that get along, but this group from top to bottom is really unique in just the way that all of these personalities, and some of these personalities have driven other teammates crazy over the years, but they all work together in this group. And I think Ant deserves a lot of credit for that. I think Conley does. I think Carl and Rudy do. Like, it's just a tight knit group that is fun to be around, that is engaging, that is easy to work with. And so it's cool to see a team like that have success on the court, because we all know sort of some of the demons that, or some of the arrows that have been slung these guys' way, and soft and stuff like that. You can't win with guys like this. Well, they're winning, and it's really kind of it's neat to see that all come together.
I'm not surprised they won the series. I'm not surprised they won Game 7. I am surprised they won the series with so many uneven offensive performances by their best players. Cat didn't show up one game. Ant had a couple of bad games. In Game 7, Conley, Ant, Kyle Anderson, and Nikhil Alexander-Walker went 9 for 41 from the field.
Yeah.
And they won anyway. And, of course, you want them to hit their shots, but it is pretty amazing that they can survive a shooting night like that, because they have depth and they play defense.
Yeah, that's the one thing, Jim. Like, you know, I went into last night being ready for anything, not knowing what to expect. But I can tell you one thing I did not expect. I did not expect the Timberwolves to win the game handily with Anthony Edwards going 6 for 24. Like, I just, there was no scenario in my brain that would say that would be possible. And when you look at halftime, when they're down 15 points, Conley, Ant, Rudy, and Nikhil Alexander-Walker were a combined 2 for 22 from the floor. And it was just like, where are they going to get a bucket? And you know where they got buckets? They got buckets from Karl Anthony Towns and Jaden McDaniels. And just enough to kind of keep them in it, and keep it from getting to 30 and being completely unattainable in terms of a comeback. And so yesterday, the game seven really typified the resourcefulness of this group, in terms of there was times in that game where it was Karl Anthony Towns carrying the load, especially in the first half offensively, and making shots and just kind of stemming the tide a little bit. There were times when Jaden McDaniels was coming up huge. There were times when Rudy Gobert looked completely overwhelmed by Jokic in the first half, and then he dominated Jokic in the fourth quarter. Naz Reid, same thing, was terrible for three quarters, and then in the fourth quarter was incredible on both ends of the floor. Mike Conley was awful in the first half, not just missing shots, decision-making, you know, just making plays that are uncharacteristic of him. Then he's hitting big threes and getting steals late in, you know, in the third and fourth quarters to kind of spur this comeback. you just had so many different guys contribute at different times that were just critical. And that's what this team has been about all season long. And they've believed that they are, you know, 1 through 7, 8, 9. They have the guys that can do that. And they went out and showed it on, you know, in game 7 on the road against the defending champions to be able to win that way. It just really bodes well for the rest of these playoffs, because it does show that they don't have one way they can win. They can beat you in many different ways. And that is hugely valuable when stakes get highest, when foul trouble comes, when there's just an off shooting night from someone. They find other ways to win. And that's going to make them a pretty tough out here.
Okay. Sorry. This is such a pain in the ass. All right. 3, 2. I guess I should introduce the show. We got excited. We started talking here. He's John Krasinski. This is the John Krasinski Show. John's from The Athletic. I'm Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune. Brandon Morton is our producer, as he has been for so many years. We're coming to you from the Aquarius Home Services Studio, and we want to thank our newest sponsor, Princeton Liquors, as well as TSR Injury Law, Head Flyer Brewing, Shepherd Goods and Lamb Chops Clothing Line. We'll do a Twitter question and a giveaway in conjunction with Shepherd Goods and Lamb Chops Clothing Line later. But for right now, John, will you introduce us to Princeton Liquors?
Yeah, welcome to the show, Princeton's Liquors in Maple Grove. Bill Princeton's the proprietor, has deep ties to the Timberwolves organization. He was an intern there for the Timberwolves and Lynx in the 2000 and 2001 seasons. He wore the Crunch mascot outfit a little bit here and there, and he's been a longtime supporter of my work on social media, and it's just been in the community for a long time. Princeton's Liquors in Maple Grove, they have two things that they really hang their hats on. One is their craft beer selection, which is consistently rated as one of the very best in the metro area, and not just in the metro area, such as I should say, but across the state. They're also, bourbons are a huge focus for them. If you can go, on YouTube, and you can find bourbon experts that call Princeton's Liquors a honey hole, which is great selection. If you're a bourbon drinker, if you're a connoisseur, you can find what you need at Princeton's Liquors in Maple Grove. It's a family-owned business, third generation booze slinger in Bill Princeton. The family business goes back 100 years or more. And so if you need anything to drink, you need THC seltzers and gummies, you need beer, you need bourbon, you need wine, whatever, go to Princeton's Liquors in Maple Grove. Thanks again for joining us, Bill Princeton and Princeton's Liquors. And we're glad to have you for what is an incredible time for this podcast and for the Timberwolves and everything going on right now. So Princeton's Liquors in Maple Grove.
Thank you, Bill. Also, thanks to TSR Injury Law. You know the deal, Nas Reed. 612 TSR time. If you're injured, call that number. They will take care of you, and you might even get to meet Nas Reed. Probably not. I'm making that part up, but you never know. He's a good dude. All right. Rudy's shot. It wasn't the most important play of the game, but it was the moment, I think, where we all said, okay, this is happening.
Yeah, I mean, that is, you know, it did remind me of, you remember it was game 3, right, when Jamal Murray hits the three-quarter length shot. And just like, it seems like moments like that, when they happen, that team never loses in a playoff game like that. And so the Timberwolves are making their charge. They're certainly taking control of the game. The Nuggets are on their heels. And they come out of a timeout, 5 seconds on the shot clock, and the Nuggets have a chance to sort of steady themselves and get back in the game a little bit and get control of it. Well, the ball comes to Rudy. He takes a couple of dribbles. The clock is winding down. A turnaround, fadeaway, Hakeem Olajuwon, dream shake over Nikola Jokic, high arcing, splashes through nothing but net. And you could see Jokic's just defeat kind of come across his body when that happened. And it really struck me, Jim, because we've seen Jokic do that to so many other players. Now, Jokic obviously has the reputation to make those shots, but he makes these just incredible high degree of difficulty shots against the Lakers, against the Warriors, against the Wolves. He's done it. And you're just like dispirited. And you're like, what in the heck could I have done better? And that was this case for Rudy, who never obviously makes, you know, these 18-foot jumpers. And so when that fell through, I think everyone in the arena knew, okay, this is going to be over here. Like, there is something in the air that never blows the Timberwolves away, that is now got, you know, at their backs. And I think that it was, you know, just one of those symbolic moments of, you know, an improbable comeback that really kind of sealed it. There were other great, great plays, but that was the one where you're like, okay, this thing is actually really happening here.
I think it was Alan Horton who put out the stat. Alan does a really good job with stats on Twitter, as well as being a great radio broadcaster. He said that Rudy has the best plus minus in the playoffs.
Yeah, plus 111.
That's the stat. Yes.
Yep.
That's amazing. Yep. Because, you know, you watch him out there and he's having to deal with Jokic and a great team and he's scrambling around and you know he's impactful, but it isn't always blocked shots or rebounds. Sometimes it's just presence, but what a stat.
Yeah, it's amazing. And really, honestly, too, the at halftime of the game, Charles Barkley said they need to bench Rudy Gobert. And I can tell you that there were more probably people that were thinking, ooh, what are the Wolves going to do here? Because Jokic had 15 rebounds at half, 5 offensive rebounds. The Nuggets were up 14-2 in second chance points because Rudy just wasn't as active there, wasn't getting involved. And you're looking at it, and Ant couldn't find the rhythm. And so it's like, okay, what do they do here? How do they get back into this? What is happening with this team? And do they have to make a couple of changes to the rotation or anything like that? Credit to Chris Finch, who has done this not only all year, but going back to the summer when Chris Finch and Tim Connelly did not panic after a rough first year with Rudy Gobert and Karl-Anthony Towns, and they didn't make a big trade to change the face of it. They stuck with him. And Rudy was phenomenal in the fourth quarter. Just lights out from a defensive standpoint, hitting free throws. And I think that he knows that this team believes in him. He knows that his coaches believe in him. And that is an important thing for Rudy Gobert. He needs to have that sort of support system, that belief and trust. And he plays better when he has that. And so they did stick with him. And he was hugely impactful in that game. And he also he's been tremendously impactful all playoffs. He came into these playoffs with a undeserved reputation of being able to be played off the floor and being able to be exploited and exposed. And all he's done is blow all of that out of the water to help the Timberwolves get to their first Western Conference Finals in 20 years.
Yes. All right. I want to get to Kat, maybe a little more on Ant, Jaden, Mike Malone popping the gasket, which I didn't see coming, along with a lot of other things. First of all, though, tell us about Headflyer Brewing.
Headflyer Brewing, Northeast Minneapolis. They have been longtime partners with us here at Talk North and the John Krasinski Show. You have probably been to a live show at Headflyer with Tim Connelly, with Chris Finch, with Michael Grady, with Dane Moore. We've had all sorts of great events there. But let me tell you what, the events on a nightly basis at Timberwolves games right now at Headflyer are off the charts. Like, I've seen some of the footage from the tap room being packed with Timberwolves fans on game night. They stay open later on game nights, so you can gather, watch on their many flat screen TVs, the big projection screen on one wall. It is a perfect place to watch a Timberwolves game. They have great, great beer. They have great swag, great t-shirts, great specials. Food trucks are out there. Do not miss, if you are unlucky and can't get to a game, either on the road or at home, get to Headflyer Brewing and bring your friends and just revel in all of the Timberwolves fans that are there. You will not be disappointed. You will have a great time. You will drink great beer and you will enjoy it. Trust me. So Headflyer Brewing, Northeast Minneapolis.
And tell us about Shepherd Goods and Lamb Chops Clothing Line.
Shepherd Goods, Lamb Chops Clothing Line, SG, lambchops.com. Unbelievably comfortable sweatpants, t-shirts, hoodies, shorts. The best shorts I own our Lamb Chop shorts. You can go there, go to the, use the promo code JONK20 for 20% off at Shepherd Goods and Lamb Chop's clothing line. High quality, super comfortable, affordable clothes from Timberwolves super fans, Jordan and Craig. They sit courtside. They, I saw Jordan in Denver for game 7. Just always have been very supportive, and you cannot beat the quality, the comfort, the style of their clothes. SGLambChops.com, promo code JONK20 for 20% off. And at the end of this show, we will answer a Twitter question, and the winner will get a free pair of Lamb Chop shorts.
Quite fitting that Karl-Anthony Towns got the last rebound. The game ends with the ball in his hands after a brilliant, if subtle, game 6 and a brilliant game 7.
I just felt so happy for him, Jim. I really did. This is a guy who has taken a ton of heat over his 9 years in the league. Some of it is deserved. Some of it he earned. A lot of it, in my estimation, has been unfair and has been reductive. And here he is when the Timberwolves needed him the most. In game 4 against Phoenix, he was great in the closeout to close out the Suns. Game 6 and game 7, he was terrific in do-or-die situations. And he had a moment, and you wrote about this, and I wrote about this as well, where he grabs the ball and the clock ticks to 0 and he stands in front of the Timberwolves bench where there are hundreds and hundreds of Timberwolves fans going absolutely bonkers for this team and for Karl-Anthony Towns, and he just soaked it in. And you could see that he thought about 9 years of, you know, fired coaches, traded teammates, Jimmy Butler's nonsense, Gerson Rosas' drama, losing his mother, losing Flip, going through everything that he's gone through. And what I always said about Karl-Anthony Towns, which is actually similar to Timberwolves fans, is he never quit on the Wolves. And he could have asked for a trade. He's had 7 GMs, 5 head coaches in 9 years. There's enough volatility here that he would have been more than it would have been more than understanding if he said, "Look, I got to go somewhere else." He didn't. He stayed in here, and he got better, and he's been more mature and more composed in these playoffs than he's ever been. And just like Wolves fans, like, they stayed with it. They got kicked in the teeth a lot, and now both are being rewarded. And so to see him be able to enjoy that moment, in the biggest win in franchise history, and him to be such a central figure defensively, offensively, and all that, he deserves it. He's been through a lot. He's put himself through a lot. And so to see him kind of standing, you know, in triumph there with so many fans showering love upon him, it was a pretty powerful scene.
It was. It was also fascinating to see Chris Finch just up on his feet. Somebody finally made him use his crutches, but he could not stay seated.
Incredible, wasn't it?
Yeah, as he and Mike Anori guide this team through all those straights. Finch is another really good guy. You're happy for sure. The guy.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, you're right. And those last, like, 3 minutes, right before Ant hit the 3 to go up 10, and the amount of energy that was in that whole Timberwolves team and the sideline, everyone was standing. Chris Finch was standing. You felt it. We sit way far away, right? In Denver, we sit way up in the corner, at the top of the first row, as far as humanly possible away, by still being in the lower bowl from the Timberwolves bench. But you could feel their energy just emanating from them in those, like, last 6-7 minutes of the fourth quarter. They're like, "We have these guys. Like, we were down there. We were down 20, and now we have them and we are crushing them." And to see, like, the urgency, the intensity, and to see Finch stand up in that moment and ride that out with his guys, like patellar tendon be damned. It was such a visceral experience. Like you could just feel it, like just from hundreds of feet away. It was like nothing I've ever experienced covering a basketball team.
And this is why we cover sports. We didn't get in the business to write about a coach getting fired. We got in because of moments like this. This is great stuff.
It's amazing. It's absolutely phenomenal. You know how hard it was for these guys. You know how hard they work for it. You know how unlikely it is. You know how many people did not expect them to do this. And, you know, here they are doing it and just kind of, you know, emerging from the cocoon and spreading their wings, you know, on a national stage, and to see it happen and to see like, see them kind of really single-handedly stamping out the Minnesota cynicism of sports fans, you know, one victory at a time. It's been breathtaking. And, you know, what we cover sports for is the unexpected. This is certainly unexpected. The way that they went about this, the way that they came back on the road in game 7 against the best player in the world. Like that is why, you know, that is why so many cable companies and streamers and stuff bid so much money for sports entities, because you cannot manufacture this type of drama and this type of unpredictability in anything else. And it is completely intoxicating and super, super fun.
Mike Mullen was a blast to be around. He's a great interview. He handles press conferences really well. He's a good coach. And he snapped last night. We're talking here on Monday after the Sunday night game. And somebody basically asked him, you know, what it's like to lose a game like that, blowing a 20-point lead, which is, I don't know how it was asked, but that's not a bad question.
Not a terrible question, and no.
It's not the best question ever, but these are, you know, we're not scripted these things out. You just kind of, you're throwing topics out, hoping to say something interesting. And Mike Mullen absolutely snapped. And my amateur psychologist diagnosis is he really thought his team was going to make some history this year, and he's devastated.
He is, yeah. And, you know, one thing that you hear about Michael Mullen, and I will say this, like, I have always enjoyed my interactions with him. He is a very forceful personality. He is outspoken. He shares his thoughts all of the time. I'm good with that. You won a championship, especially a little bit. That's great. No problems with it. But you do hear that he's wound pretty tight. Like he is ultra competitive. And there are times where he can grade on people just with just how tight he holds the steering wheel. And I think that in that moment, last night in the press conference, you saw him just break the steering wheel in his hands. And because he knew that there was a better team that beat them. But he also knew that the way that they beat them was completely antithetical to who the Nuggets are supposed to be. The Nuggets are supposed to be the crunch time killers. The Nuggets are supposed to be the champions who can hold up to adversity and respond to it. The Nuggets are supposed to be the team that was the favorite in the Western Conference that was going to be inevitable. And they were powerless in that second half. And that is not something that the Denver Nuggets, that Michael Malone, that Nikola Jokic, that Jamal Murray have been anywhere close to feeling over the last 2 years prior to this series. Like they have been the best team in the league. You know, I know throw out the records, like they have been the best team in the league for the last 2 years. And they ran roughshod through the playoffs last season to their first championship. And they were completely without any ability to stop what was happening to them on their home floor in game 7. And I think that was a wholly unique experience for Michael Malone. And I don't think he knew how to process it. And he did a really poor job of it. I hate it that he did it that way, because it really does kind of smack of being a poor loser. I think it was really indicative of what the Timberwolves did to the Nuggets. And that's kind of my other point here, Jim, is that after the Phoenix series, there was so much discussion about, well, what's wrong with the Suns? You know, boy, what a mess they are. Like, what a mess they are. And then now with the Nuggets, it's, oh, they ran out of gas. Like, they just didn't have enough left in the tank. Well, you know why they ran out of gas? Because the Timberwolves put their foot on the gas all series and didn't fall. It didn't, you know, fade down 3-2 after losing three in a row. You know why the Suns were a mess? Because the Timberwolves made them look like a mess. Like, so I think it's time for people to, like, really give this team the credit. Like, they've played KD and Booker and reduced them to rubble. They played the best player in the world in Jokic, and he had a really good series, but they rendered him in unable to take over the way that he normally does. They turned Jamal Murray into a complete non-factor for much of the series outside of game three and the first half of game seven. And they eliminated Michael Porter Jr. from the series entirely, just erased him. And Michael Porter Jr. was great against the Lakers in the previous series. So yes, I'm sure that the Suns could have done a few things better and the Nuggets could have done a few things better, but the Timberwolves are the team that has changed the character of both of these opponents, and they deserve that credit because that's just, I think they are the ones that have dictated what has happened to their opponents.
We usually don't go really long with these shows. We want them to be bite-sized. A couple more things I want to get to, though, and obviously we'll continue to be doing shows throughout the playoffs, and it's been a blast. I like their matchup with Dallas. What do you think?
I do like it, Jim. But here's what I will say. I think a lot of people looked at this series against the Nuggets as the Western Conference Finals. I do agree that Denver and Minnesota are, I think, the two best teams in the West. They may be the two best teams in the entire NBA. I'm not exactly sold on Boston, but we'll see about that. And so there is a, I think there's a sense among some Wolves fans of, hey, the hardest part is over. Now we're in the Western Conference Finals. Now you have home court advantage and we're playing a lesser team. So the NBA Finals is a given. And let me tell you, it is not a given when you're facing Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. Like, I know that the Wolves have perimeter players, defenders to line up against them. And I think that they do match up well. But I think that Dallas is playing incredibly well, and they have since they made the trade to add PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford. They are very athletic. They are deep. They are hungry. They play really good offense with Kyrie and Luka. They've played much better defense since Washington and Gafford came into the fold. I think it's going to be a very tough series. Kind of the Herb Brooks line comes to mind where, you know, after they beat the Russians in the Olympics and they play Sweden next. And he says, you know, if you lose this game, you'll take this to your fucking graves. I think there is a little bit of that sense. Like, the Wolves need to really, you know, recalibrate, bear down, and be ready for these guys because they're going to be good. It's going to be hard. I can see it a 6 or 7 game series. I do give the Wolves the edge. I think they should win this series if they play well. But anytime you're facing Luka and Kyrie in playoffs, you should be very concerned and have, as Kyle Anderson and Greg Popovich always say, an appropriate level of fear for sure.
Yes. All right, let's get to the Twitter question.
The Twitter question comes from Burr Street at BERSTREET. Can we, the team, petition to have the throwbacks for as long as they're in the playoffs? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, I asked the same question. They have the big win in game 6. They did. What I've been told is that the league frowns upon teams wearing throwback uniforms in the playoffs. I think they want, I don't know the exact reasons why, but my guess is that they want the more modern look. They want teams to be looking forward and not back, and have the identifiable markings of their team. They still allow city edition jerseys, if you're going to allow that, why not allow the throwbacks? But that's just their quirky little rule. But the Timberwolves did petition the league to get him in game six. That was granted. They have petitioned again to get him in game seven. That was granted. Will it be granted going forward? My guess is it might be a tough sell to keep that happening. I hope it does, because they should wear them all the time. They are great uniforms. They're the best look, and the players like them. They play well in them. Go forward. But I can see the league maybe being a little bit more of a stickler for its rules, especially as we get into games that are going to be viewed by even more people. So I will be interested. I don't know what the answer is going to be. I am sure the Wolves will be doing everything they can to try to wear those uniforms as often as they can. It's just a matter of if the league will loosen itself and not take itself as seriously and just let the Wolves do it. So we'll have to see. But congratulations to Burr Street for a good question, and I will DM you with SG Lamb Chops for your free pair of Lamb Chop shorts.
Great stuff. Thank you, John. Thank you, Brandon. Thanks to everyone who listens. The season's been a blast. It will continue to be a blast. We'll talk to you very soon.